bitch loves existentialism and nihilism and loves being like, that's a social construct, just at like the most annoying time. Which, like, I do genuinely like deconstruction. I'm just also, yeah, I'm not gonna send you the ones that are like straight up. I mean, I'll send the two of you to them to look at, the ones that are straight up not safe for work, but I don't recommend posting them because I like definitely spent $200 on a picture of Robb Stark with arrows in him and a dick in his mouth. Well, maybe like don't.
Let's start the podcast this way.
So I'm going to send you guys that one. Maybe do not post that one, please. But I am fine sharing.
We can still look at it amongst ourselves. Yeah, and they can Google it if they want to look at it. Yeah. Also,
I can tell them where to find it.
I've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah, yeah. I will tell them my not safe for work Robb blog link.
Hi everyone. This is Game of Bones. This is episode 401.
We're talking about
The Prince of Winterfell. Everyone got quiet. It has not been quiet.
Stage fright.
The Prince of Winterfell and The Watcher are our chapters today. And with us on the podcast are two friends of mine, Sinya and Cass Hardwick, who I have an introduction stuff to read, but I have to find it first. I guess you can just say hi to everyone.
Hi.
And not pretend like we haven't been talking this whole time.
Oh, yeah,
no, totally not.
Yeah,
we've never.
Oh, my God.
We haven't had any fun yet so far.
Very serious. If you want, I can, I texted you the blurbs. I can read them if you want.
Yeah, you should read the blurb. Tell everyone about yourselves. We have so much to get through tonight.
Yeah, we got a lot to say. Sinya and Cass met on Tumblr.com about 4 years ago, writing and blogging about House Bolton, and have been married for 2 years and have two cats. Cass is a professional cat expert and works in animal rescue, occasionally naming dogs after people, much like Ramsay Bolton. Sinya works in a cafe and studies poetry and literary theory. Sinya is pretty sure Roose Bolton would be a postmodernist. Cass's URL on Tumblr is tender-vittles. You're also on AO3 is tender-vittles is your username there, as well as on the Instagram. And I'm Love Your Crooked Neighbor, all one word, N-E-I-G-H-B-O-U-R, which is a line from a poem by Auden. That's my Tumblr URL. Oh, my super edgy Instagram is necro.pharmacon, necro.pharmacon. And then on AO3, this is Archive of Our Own, which is readers, which is for fan fiction, but specifically it's a transformative works nonprofit, which started after fanfiction.net went down because
RIP. They still exist. They just don't exist in a good form.
After they took down all the porn, basically. But also, like, the idea that there should be somewhere that protects people's right to make fan works, post them, and be willing to, like, fight external legal things, whereas fanfiction.net isn't really...
Doesn't care.
Like, just doesn't give a shit about that. Together, Sinya and Cass write fan fiction, cosplay, and have given presentations on fandom and House Bolton. We met on Tangler.com.
We did.
Tangler, eh?
Tangler. Romance. That's like a joke instead of being like Tumblr.com, Tangler.hell, Blue Hell, just like fucking stupid alternate names.
I just want to tell everyone that ever since I've known you, you've been the Boltons to me. And we wanted to have you on the podcast so badly to talk about Roose Bolton and Ramsay Bolton and what they're up to in the North. And we realized on our last episode, there was so much Roose and leeching. And it was like, why haven't we put this together yet? So now we're going to make a stand, hopefully, for the rest of A Feast with Dragons. Any excuse if we have to pull you guys back on the podcast, we will.
Yeah, but I think
please.
This is just the perfect opportunity to jump right in, though, with everything that's happened in this chapter today. But I want to hear your story of love.
Oh, yeah.
Also.
Yeah, I guess tell the quick version.
So this is our story.
Or tell the whole version. I just, I'm just so, this is a happy moment for me. This is all coming together.
We're really excited to be on it.
So our romance began 4 years ago when there was going to be a Bolton fandom meetup at the Bronx Zoo.
And yeah.
Perfect place.
Yeah, of course. I was somewhat new to Bolton fandom at the time. Thramsy appeared to me in a dream, and then I woke up and I was like, wow, the internet needs to know about this. And little did I know, the internet already knew about it. So there was some confusion where Senya got an anonymous message from someone on Long Island saying like, oh, I really would like to come to the meetup, but I'm shy. And that wasn't me, even though I lived on Long Island at the time, but everyone thought it was me. I had been too shy to say anything at all, even though I really wanted to go. So I was like,
hey, is that you? Do you want to come to my cool not serial killer meetup at the Bronx Botanical Zoo?
We're just here to celebrate the Boltons.
So then Senya like reached out to me and was like, oh, is this you? And I was like, no, but can I come anyway? So then I ended up going, and that's the weird story of how we met.
It's not weird to us or probably anyone listening. That's so magical.
Well, we
and then we just started hanging out.
We had an immediate chemistry.
We did.
But, is that right?
Yeah. Some immediate like.
But we didn't do anything for a long time because we had both gotten out of very bad relationships. I was in this is gonna hit on the sad parts of the story. I was in an abusive relationship for about 3 years. Before I met Cass, and I was like, well, clearly if I start dating them, we'll just turn into awful people, because that must be how relationships work. It's not that this one person was a bad person, it's that like clearly dating is bad. Mm-hmm.
I had also been in an abusive relationship for many years prior to that, and then I was kind of in I like was like at the end of another relationship.
I was
then,
a homewrecker.
Yeah, you were.
Oh no.
And then we slowly finally got it together.
Yeah, the first time we actually kissed was after we watched Resistance, which Ewan and Tom Alacia are in.
Yeah.
And then we finally smooched.
Mm-hmm. Finally.
Yeah, no, it was like after like 6 months.
That's a long time.
Oh my god. It was really bad because we had been going on things that were kind of like dates, and I was like, oh, we could like do more stuff, like we could like kiss and stuff. Cass was like, yeah, and then like, we didn't kiss, and then it took us like another 3 months.
Yeah, then we hugged.
Then we hugged, baby steps. Yeah, we moved in together with other people. Then we were, when our lease was gonna be up, this is real, real cute actually. We were trying to figure out what we wanted to do and if we wanted to live together, and we were like, I think I want to live with you forever. We sat on it for a couple months, and then we were like, oh, yeah, let's get married. It feels right.
It's so sweet.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
We just celebrated our second anniversary on May 27th.
Yeah, May 27th.
Aw, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, but now we can get into, like, the juicy bit. Sorry, sped over it at the end.
Yeah, when did Walder enter your life?
Walder was right before we were married,
like a couple months before we were married. So we were still living with roommates, but one of our roommates...
She
moved out and took her cat with her. Her cat didn't like other cats. So as soon as he left, I was like, Senya, we have to get a cat. I will shrivel up and die if we don't get a cat right now. So we went to New York City Animal Care Centers.
Don't. And don't declaw your cats. I will come to your house and I will claw you myself.
That's like Ramsay cutting off the fingers.
It actually is the equivalent.
That's the same thing.
So learn something, Game of Thrones. Like don't reek your cats.
Don't reek your cats.
I don't even have a cat and I feel like I'm being come for.
Don't reek your cats. I don't know where to begin.
Why the Boltons? Where did all of this begin?
Do you want to go first or second?
I could go first.
Yeah, go first.
I wanted to watch the show, and I'm a big nerd, so I was like, I'm gonna read the books first, because gotta read the books before you see the cinematic version. So I read all the books, like I like pounded through them because they were so good. And then a couple of months after that, I think I was like rereading or something, or I just finished the show or whatever, but I had a dream about Ramsay and Theon as like a thing. And then it literally came to me in a dream. It was faded. I woke up and I was like, wow, this is like a thing. I need to go write some fan fiction. And it was kind of all uphill, downhill, from there. And then I just got really into writing fan fiction. I just like churned out a bunch of content like really quickly over a couple months and set everyone's expectations of me way too high. I've just always been really into villains, but like something about Ramsay has really stuck.
It is.
I mean, you know, he's fashion. A fashion icon. I think it's just that he just does his thing. He does what he wants.
Bastard. What did you say about Ramsay last night? That he, there's like three things that he would, if you needed taken care of, yeah. He's got you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we have a votive candle
that my former coworker got me. So a Ramsay Bolton votive candle.
So the things yeah. He's in charge of, like as a saint, if he were a saint, or like the thing, oh my God, I'm going to offend so many fucking Catholics on this air show. But is.
Just say you're sorry.
Yeah. Yo, very sorry.
Receiving packages.
Overcoming obstacles and pet health. Yikes. Oh my God. Bastard, what are you gonna do with your life? I'm gonna get what I want.
Ouch.
That's a parody of shoes to, as a real to throwback. Date ourselves. Young lady, what are you gonna do?
I'm gonna get what I want.
Fiscal responsibility. Like literally.
I love that video so much.
No, I love it so much. Good. Honestly,
such a classic.
Opulent queer art. Well, the short version is like also I've definitely been edgy forever, but the short and like more serious answer is like this is like an example of like we have a whole bunch of like queer people that we hang out with on the internet talking about enjoying villains, which like has to do with like queer coding stuff. Ramsay, what a bicon! What a problematic bicon! Just fucking. Wow. But more seriously, I think it's very understandable that looking at a lot of how I grew up and what it means for me, like physically to be like read as a man when I'm not frequently is to like be physically not hyper masculine looking. And also growing up with a lot of situations where I didn't have control over my environment and didn't have control and wanted control, that I think being drawn to the concept of a not super masculine looking, but definitely masculine person who has like a bunch of power. I mean, to me, that makes sense why that would be like appealing to me on a subconscious level. And like that a lot of the like weird like literary and like you know like in my like actual lit study stuff I'm like also edgy. I study spectrality and like hauntedness. I'm looking at a copy of Martyrdom, a very short introduction that's on my floor. I have like a notebook that looks like me. I'm just into like embodiment and bodies and like art and shit, and like so is Cass, and we're into that together. Like,
yeah,
this isn't like a weird isolated interest we have. We're also interested in horror in general,
and I think I mean at least for me, I don't know about for you, but definitely like with Theon and Ramsay stuff, having like a very like long history of being in an abusive relationship, particularly during like some very formative years of my life, I feel like Bolton stuff has been like a really good outlet for me and has really helped me get to like a healthier place in my life, both in terms of like my interpersonal relationships and like my own mental health.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't know, you know, if I hadn't fallen into this like little niche fandom within a bigger fandom, I don't know. You know, if I would have made the same amount of progress. And obviously part of that is like having a really good supportive spouse and, you know, just having someone that like really gets me and that really connects with me on a really deep level. But also just like, you know, just having that like imaginative creative outlet as well. And that's definitely been a big part of it, and why this has kind of been such an enduring interest.
Yeah, we're making big googly eyes at each other.
Good. I can tell.
One of the things that you made me think of is I read Confessions of a Mask when I was like 14, 15, and still like I had not read A Song of Ice and Fire at that point. I read it when I was in my 20s. And like the first couple books I read that were pretty formative to me were all about like being gay and like art and violence being a site of desire, both like desiring violence on oneself and others and desiring violence on art, and a lot of stuff with Saint Sebastian, and like that for me, just due to like really like other kids being real fucking mean to me, which is something that I've been working through of late, I just didn't have any control, and I had this like understanding that I was supposed to be something monstrous or different than other children. I have a weird name, and I was one of like three Jewish kids, and there wasn't that much like racial or ethnic diversity where I grew up, so I was kind of like the most like other, like I was in like the bottom tier basically at my school. Like there were definitely people who faced more like explicit visual racism, and like xenophobia, because like for me it's not racism, but like it's in like a same like category of things that I was. And then also being out as queer when I was in high school, I was used to self-conceiving as something like monstrous because of being persecuted by other people. So like I've just kind of been like this forever. So thanks society, now you all get repaid in hot, steamy torture fanfiction.
Rob Wend.
Yeah, paying it forward instead of being negative to other people like people were to me. I'm giving you all sexy art that I paid for.
Yeah, and producing it ourselves.
Sorry, that got too sad, so I wanted to like pop it back up. Because whenever, I don't know, instead of, I've started like giving people the serious answers about that. Because then when people are genuine, they really care. And then when people are like, just trying to like be annoying, then it makes them feel bad, and I'm still petty, but also like pettiness and joking aside, it is like I think it just helps you, like when people do really care and really want to understand, I think it really tells people a lot.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people can relate to this idea of figuring out their identity and like coming to terms with things that have happened in their lives through fandom and kind of through that creative expression that we've all found through fandom. Yeah. So I think it's definitely super relatable to kind of hear other people's stories in such an open and honest way, because on some level or another, I think a lot of us can relate as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. And for some people, it's just something maybe like a little bit less flamboyant. It's like, oh, like John's struggle with knowing where he belongs in the world. Like, reminds me of like my own struggle with that, and like my favorite POV characters are probably like Theon, Brienne, Davos, Catelyn. That's a divisive thing. Cass does not like the Catelyn POVs, and I do.
God.
Love fucking Davos.
Yes.
In this house, we love and respect Davos Seaworth and Stannis Baratheon, despite being Bolton fans.
We love and respect
Even
Davos in this house as well.
Probably rip on Stannis.
Well, whenever
a lot.
People like
Bruce just drops.
Yo, Bruce drags
just drops,
Stannis.
I want.
It
Ramsay
was unbelievable.
Ramsay wanted to give fake Arya his head as a wedding present.
Oh my god, there's so much. Roose Bolton really just did.
Roose Bolton, Roose like, don't that. Encourage my naughty bastard Bolton.
Like, every single time I fucking reread sections that Roose is in, I'm always like, oh, maybe my headcanons about him that I make up are really just, like, self-indulgent, and I'm wrong, and I'm just, like, self-projecting on this, which, like, of course I am a little bit, but then he does shit like that.
Yeah.
This was why Roose Bolton had clothed him as a lord again, to play his part in this mummer's farce. Oh my god, mummer's farce. If you drink every time the phrase mummer's farce comes up, you will die. But
in this chapter alone, or in
Roose,
this whole book?
Fucking serve us in... Well, I'm gonna use the fucking sexy voice I used to read Roose's part, which I sent in a recording to Casimir first early in our relationship.
Yep.
Serve us in this, and when Stannis is defeated, we will discuss how best to restore you to your father's seat, his lordship had said in that soft voice of his, a voice made for lies and whispers. Theon never believed a word of it. Like that's canonical. Like that's so fucking overdramatic. Like,
imagine
I love
Bruce
it.
Just like afterwards just be like, psych,
bitch.
So you don't think that he bought into that at all? Not even a little bit?
No, I think Theon bought into it.
He probably had Theon
was like, I want it to be true. I want it to be true. But like the fact that Roos is just really 100% like that all the time.
Because I mean, in this whole chapter, he's like thinking about, oh, what would it be like to have a home? So I'm sure when Roos told him that, he felt like the tingles of like, oh, well, maybe. But then was like, Theon, no.
Theon, like Reek was like, yeah, I want it. And Theon was like, don't listen to that fucking, this naughty man.
He even compares it to like, does he compare that to Kira with her keys with the, during the fake out?
No, the fake out, that's at the bedding.
With the knife, right. With the knife, right. Yeah. But I mean, it's the same idea.
The son is just the shadow of the father. Yeet. Like,
yeah.
Right, where is him fucking just ragging on fucking Stannis, you fucking...
It's when he's talking at the feast.
God, there's blah blah fucking, they're all afraid of this mind dishonor might run. No, the part's gross.
Yummy pie.
No, like, oh, I'm like, okay.
The part with the Rat King when Manuel was like, play the Rat King
it's
song.
Hey, play the Rat King. Hey, play the Rat King.
Play the Rat King. Wink, wink.
That's the one I want to hear right now. He goes, we should have a song about the rat cook. He was muttering as he staggered past the on lean last night. Singer, give us a song about the rat cook. How was that pie?
Yeah, that fucking bitch. Like, he really did that. God, this, yeah.
Everyone's so shady.
Everyone is so shady. Everyone's such so fucking shady. Barbie, Dustin.
Barbie's
girl.
Girl, everyone.
I love in all of Theon's chapters when he like hangs out with old people and they overshare with him. That's like my favorite thing. I have dumb bitchitis and can't fucking find the dragging Santa's boat. So let's.
I could probably find it.
Yeah, but also Barbie Dustin is talking about Roose's.
He's. You want me to read it?
The Stannis dragging, but Well, oh no, but not the, oh my God, my, there's so many things Barbie Dustin says that just like let me the fuck up. But I was thinking about like AU, meaning alternate universe, where Roos, because like, I do think about Roos and Barbie together.
This part where
the, so far, we're off in an alternate universe right now.
Okay,
right?
No, we're off in an alternate universe.
Okay, got
where
it.
Roos marries Barbie to like keep her allied.
Okay.
Because he already married her sister. Which is like
that
great,
didn't go well.
But, that didn't go well for her. But I don't know.
For their child.
But I also think like I think Ru- well I don't think according to George R. R. Martin, Roose and Barbie have fucked. But like because there's no reason for that to be included. There's nothing that it does to like further the characters.
But
or
you
the
think
plot.
Based on how she thought about him in this chapter that something might have happened?
Yeah, like I think it's an interesting idea. There's definitely other people on the internet who are into that.
Yeah,
I wrote a very
and cool... I mean she even like because she's widowed she's
yeah she's single.
She says well no but she also says like Theon says. The Lady of Barrowton, a Dustin by marriage, a Riswell by birth. And then she says the widow of Barrowton.
Yeah.
So she is well aware that she's not attached to an important man right now. And I think she's thinking that perhaps she needs to be.
He takes care to keep me sweet.
Yeah,
he does.
With his dick.
Sorry. Oh my God, we talked about canonically how many times Roose Bolton has fucked.
Oh yeah, that's what we were talking about.
We know
is
at least seven because he's had three wives, one of which is Walden. God, he just came to the twins and bust his dick out.
That was
we were discussing that. Just dick out immediately.
Lost it because one time we were talking about this and I was like, Roose Bolton just rolled up to the twins and was like, what up, Walder? I'm ready to fuck.
And I just fucking lost it. Like
that was Roose Bolton in this chapter. When you think that Ramsay has all of... We look at Ramsay and we see where Theon is currently feeling and he's feeling himself. This chapter isn't a Reek chapter. Let me just go back right to the beginning.
Yeah, no, it's so... The beginning of this chapter just fucking tore my heart out.
Mm-hmm.
A face car device, Theon Greyjoy thought as he draped a fur trim cloak about her shoulders, a corpse buried in the snow. But Roose Bolton really steps it up when he's speaking later in the long haul in Winterfell, and he's making comments about like all this, let's retire and have a conversation about the real thing. My son will be consummating his marriage nearby, and we'll get the real work at hand.
So good,
yeah.
Right, he just, handling everything.
He's just fucking yeah. No, but he really is like yeah. all just like screaming at Rose, Roose Bolton aside. Like he really is just fucking brutal. This chapter, he's like, okay, yeah. Ramsay. He's like, he doesn't even fucking invite Ramsay to the meeting. He's just like, Ramsay, go fuck.
This is his wedding.
Yeah, I just want to read this. The hall is not the place for such discussions, my lords. Let us adjourn to the solar whilst my son consummates his marriage. The rest of you remain and enjoy the food and drink. Like, he really
did that.
Damn. Yeah, he really did.
He really did.
But I mean, you know what Ramsay is kind of thinking with probably for this whole time. So he
I'm gonna kill you.
Notice. He's just like,
No, Ramsay is 150% just like thinking about his like weird fucking
how he's gonna
fuck three something. That too. Like that's all like he's
Ramsay has the only quote unquote on screen threesome in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, we kinda
talked about this earlier.
We talked about
on page threesome well, so
we,
far.
We also talked about the thing that always really fucking gets me. Is God, I forgot if it's in this chapter, the version of the Dornishman's wife that's done as the Northman's wife.
It's in this chapter.
Yeah, it wasn't this one.
He sings other stuff.
Yeah, that's in you probably did that chapter just before this. Or a little bit before this, but it's really fucked up because that's where he gets the idea, probably. Or it's a reference to that. Like to what later happened, and that's like it's fucked up.
No one ever said that Ramsay doesn't appreciate art.
Yeah, I guess you could say.
Oh my god, I just facepalm. Postmodern Roose Bolton said so. Yeah, but Roose just fucking drags he fucking kicks Ramsay. Like, well, he just like, Ramsay, go fuck at your wedding.
This is Ramsay.
We have to go do grown up things. You go do that.
You go play.
It's incredible.
All of his plans are just fruiting.
Something that we've talked about in earlier episodes as we're talking about Roose Bolton is a big question that I think I have and other readers have before they get to this point and even after this point is what Roose's whole deal with Ramsay is and why he's making certain decisions with Ramsay that he is and why he's letting Ramsay behave certain ways or kind of what's going on in his head and why is he the way that he is. And I think that we get a little bit more light on him keeping Ramsay in his place in this chapter than we maybe have seen in other chapters leading up to this.
I don't chronologically remember where it is, but where Overshare Hour, what chapter is Overshare Hour with Roose Bolton for Theon?
It's just
that was
earlier.
Last chapter.
That was last chapter, right? Because that's when he's like smuggling into the wedding and dresses him
up
as Theon.
Because
that was Reek 3. I think that I always cite the babe has my eyes, like what is if one son turns against each other, the Kinslayer quote. I really think there's a lot going on there, and I think it tells us a lot.
What do you think's going on there?
Well, what I think is going on there is I think he really was like, well, I did kind of make that. I think also at the time, I think he kind of underestimated Ramsay's mom for one thing.
Yeah.
I think he really did underestimate her because like. That lady, like, so she gets raped by a dude who kills her husband in front of her, like literally kills the dude. I mean, some of this is a false attrition because you can't really attribute psychological aspects to characters. But like if she was a real, you know what I mean? Like it gets weird because she's not like a person who made the decision. But for us as a reader, we understand her as a person who made the decision to have that trauma. And then fucking rolls the fuck up. Shows up and says, you are going to give me these things.
Yeah.
And faces him and gets them is like the part that really get like Roose doesn't just fucking kill her, which he could.
He gives her a
smelly man servant, which is like him being an asshole and being like, oh great, like here you go. Take this. But I think some of that is the like, well, that is my child and that is a part of me. And like that is something I've built. Some of it also might be just have been being shitty to Bethany because, you know, he was having mad stillborn children. And I think it kind of I always read it that it Ramsay kind of like proved he could produce children.
Yeah. And it's very Henry VIII.
And that it wasn't. Oh my God.
It is.
That even him going out and sleeping with her, like, I'm like, well, I don't think he's interfering sleeping with her because that wasn't consensual. But him like going out and doing what he does is like kind of out of spite for Bethany because of all the stillborn children. But this is like, again, this is just like me making shit up. But he really is that petty. Okay, Roose is a very petty man. And I'm like, I'm sorry that I'm going off and I can give you a chance to talk, Cass. I'm sorry.
You're fine. I just didn't want you to pull the headphones.
Sorry. He's so petty. Like the fucking jape about the enmity between the Starks and the Boltons has ended.
He's really
that fucking petty. Or the time when he fucking makes fucking fur from a baby wolf out like after the meeting with Qyburn. Like, bitch is really that petty. I reread the stuff from the lore video today, which I don't know how, those are like semi-canonical, the Winterfell ones. Roos in it. Like, when I first watched it, I was like, this was ghost written by me. Like, where are my credits?
No, that video is amazing.
But also, he's like, Winterfell, do you know how it got so great? It had to get great because the Boltons were raiding it. So who really made Winterfell great? The Starks, or was it my ancestors, the Boltons? But
wow.
I own it now. It's really like that petty. He really is that petty.
He did that. Actually, and fun fact.
Yeah.
The pictures on my shoulder, of my tattoo, my Bolton sleeve. That is Royce Redarm on the top of my arm from World of Ice and Fire. So... A real image of a Bolton ancestor.
Yeah.
We should talk about that piece because it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
This is complete dedication.
I'm gonna close this idea out, which is that Roose really could have been petty enough to want to hurt Bethany by going out and like, but also just like seeing a peasant doing something he didn't like and asserting his dominance like via sexual violence is like pretty in character with both like with a type of like thinking like, when your like symbol of like your house and identity is like literally a dude with no skin, like that's how you're taught to think of the world. Like the Starks think like wolves, they're a pack, they like work together. Yeah. Like what the Boltons like have to think about in terms of like personhood is like torturing people. So I really think he is that petty, is the point that like he's just a petty bitch.
Petty man.
So petty. Yeah, but we can talk about tattoos if you want.
Yeah, no, I mean I have this whole Bolton sleeve tattoo. It's great. Ramsay, so what I wanted it to be was like a Bolton history. So that's why I have Royce Redarm up top, and then it goes to on the inside of my arm is oh my God, I'm sorry, our cat's just knocking stuff over in the bathroom. And then it goes to Domark Bolton on the inside of my arm. He's like been poisoned and he's dead.
Is he leaning over? Is that
he's on a bed.
Yeah, he's on a bed.
It looks so good.
Yeah, he looks so good. God.
And then I've got like, and then pulling it all together is kind of the wind and the leaves through the weirwood tree. So
we'll put these pictures in the show notes, by the way, everyone.
Yeah.
So then I have the weirwood tree. Yeah, so you can see him for yourself. And the three-eyed raven. Which is fitting for the chapter we're discussing. And then I have Roose stabbing Rob at the Red Wedding.
Hot.
And then Ramsay.
Sorry.
Ramsay getting his legitimacy with Winterfell in the background.
The outline he did of Winterfell is real good.
And his flayed man armor, which he does not have in the show, but he has it in the books. And it's so cool because he is the best dressed in all of Westeros.
Canon.
I was going off earlier because I was rereading the chapter.
His outfits are incredible.
His outfit, fantastic. The wedding and the Bolton cloak that he gives to Jaime.
It's
with
so tacky.
The pink cloak.
Yeah.
And
Dion realizes just how tacky it was comparatively.
Yeah.
Red rubies and then a red leather flayed man.
And then a red leather flayed man on a pink cloak. Matches his whatever he's wearing with the slash red with more blood drops and his pink cloak.
He has the garnets across it.
Yeah.
So nice.
Literal fashion icon. And then he's got the little earring that he wears, his little blood drop earring.
God, he'd be blowing up Instagram.
Seriously.
No, but for real,
I would follow.
There's been a lot of really good analysis online about like one of the reasons why he overdresses is that like that's like how he asserts being like a lord and being of an upper class. Like
real Bolton.
Like My mother has said about certain rich people in America that they are the poor man's idea of a rich man. And Ramsay is very much in this like dresses like a lower class person's idea of what a noble is, which is then with Theon, and that's a character foil for how Theon used to dress and the stuff that happens with Balon. Oh, my poor squid. poor little squid.
A poor squid chapter.
Yeah, I have a flaying knife tattoo. It's on my left inner wrist. The hilt is like a flayed face screaming. That's a little bit phallic on purpose. It's good.
I see.
Yeah, like Dave is solid. Yeah. Dave at Eight of Swords, everybody. He's the best.
Yeah, Dave Whalen. At Eight of Swords tattoo in Brooklyn. If you live.
New York. Or if you're visiting New York,
visiting.
Yeah. No, but really, they're good prices, good people. There's a bodega. Well, not a bodega, but a tattoo cat.
There's a shop cat. She's very cute.
We love her.
I pet the shop cat. I got my second one done there.
Oh yeah, you went there. Yeah, no, Dave. Yeah. But everyone who works there is great.
They're all really nice. I have a couple tattoos from people there.
God, what a good book.
Yeah,
I know, right?
Shit.
I'm glad that we had you guys on for this.
Yeah, chapter. Yeah. Is there anything
I want to say this pair of chapters, but we haven't even talked about Dorne this conversation yet.
I think we'll be fine.
Just going off about Bolton's.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hannah's like, can we just skip over the Watcher and just don't really see the point?
I'm kind of. Oh God.
Today's episode is sponsored by RX Bar.
RX Bar is a whole food protein bar made with real, whole ingredients that actually taste delicious. RX Bar believes in the power of transparency and lets the core ingredients do all the talking. That's why they list them on the front of the packaging.
RX Bars are made with a few simple, clean ingredients that each serve a purpose. Egg whites for protein, dates to bind the bars, nuts for texture, and other delicious ingredients like unsweetened chocolate, real fruit, and spices like sea salt or cinnamon.
Whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors, there is an RX bar for you. RX bars come in 14 delicious flavor varieties like mango pineapple, chocolate hazelnut, mixed berry, and chocolate chip.
They are also gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, and there are no artificial colors or preservatives or fillers used in these bars.
My family is going on a big hiking trip at the end of the month, and I ordered 2 boxes of the blueberry RX bars because they're my absolute favorite, and they're going to make a super great snack for the trail.
There are 14 different flavors to choose from, all with the ingredients, again, listed on the outside of the packaging, which is really cool. For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/ONS for owns, and enter promo code owns at the checkout.
That's rxbar.com, promo code ONS for 25% off your first order.
We referenced some of the wedding speech in our own wedding because the...
we did.
Well, because since weddings always do have an address where you like are asking who comes, but when Ramsay fucking says, who comes before the god, that part's fucking incredible.
It's so cool.
And like, yes, he's talking about the weirwood, but like... Ramsay's very narcissistic. He was also talking about himself, but at our wedding,
I just connected that for the first time.
Because for Theon he does remake himself as Theon's god, that he has the power to like
he does
his identity or like make him or like break him, and it's awful. But like, But at our wedding, cast it outside at a gazebo, and I asked them who calls, who comes, and they and then they presented themselves to me.
That's very neat.
It was really cute.
Yeah.
That's sweet. I like that a lot.
Yeah, because I wanted cast
to, we also had
to present
a,
themselves.
We also had a cellist playing
the Game of Thrones theme at one point.
And we
wore white, red, and gold, so it was like the weirwood colors.
Yeah.
But we didn't make it super explicit, but it was like low key, like somewhat like visually and verbally influenced. And
we also had the cake.
Oh my god, our after party cake had the freeze frame just before the arrow sank into Rob, and then I stuck the knife in.
Oh my god.
Cut his head off.
Yep. And then our first dance that was accidentally singing to the lyrics that you rewrote.
Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. But
Senya did like an entire written lyrics
tell by the way I use my walk. I'm a bold man. No time to talk.
Please keep going.
The peaceful land and the women warm. That's been my rule since I was born. Now it's all right. It's okay. Small folk look the other way. We can try to understand the bad blood's effect on man. Now, whether you're a mother or whether you're a brother, you're not staying alive. Hospitality is breaking and everybody's shaking. You're not staying alive. Staying alive. Oh my God. We can go through the whole thing. But I'm trying.
But
to
that
think,
was accidentally but, our first.
Yeah,
dance.
That was accidentally our first dance. And there are lyrics to the rest of.
That's
the
a perfect first dance. Holy crap!
Yeah, that was our first dance. Yeah, and it was.
So, did your wedding have all of this staggering mist and mysterious circumstance?
No, it was.
How about the lead up to that ceremony? The paragraphs.
Lead up is incredible.
Jeez.
One of my notes was just like, this is one of some of the most beautiful imagery in the book is here, and like we were talking about Theon's childhood there, and like
we went through a lot.
And I mean, he's still kind of a child now, like he's a young man, but like later, oh my God, Theon Greyjoy was no stranger to this Godwood. He had played here as a boy, skipping stones across the cold black pool beneath the weirwood, hiding his treasures in the hole of an ancient oak, stalking squirrels with a bow he made himself. Later, older, he had soaked his bruises in the hot springs after many a session in the yard with Rob and Jory and Jon Snow. And amongst these chestnuts and elms and soldier pines, he had found secret places where he could hide when he wanted to be alone. He was crying.
That part really hit me. Because I mean, because the whole chapter, he's really thinking about having a home and not having a home, really, and just like that.
Yeah,
that part, and then the fact that he hears his name being whispered that same place where he would kind of hide out when he was like a kid and just wanted to
be alone,
you know, be alone and have emotions is like
it's important that Eddard and Roose physically resemble each other and our character foils here, because Jaime, when he sees Roose for the first time, comments how much he looks like Eddard, which has always been really important to like understanding what, like, and not just what the Boltons are doing as characters, but what George, like R.R. Martin, is doing with the Boltons as like literary devices, because they're not POV characters. Like understanding that Roose does resemble Eddard, and that, you know, the Ramsay Jon Snow stuff is definitely much more obvious. And like then it's Domric and Rob are the two character foils that then you have Catelyn and Bethany, which there's like, you know, Catelyn has a lot of children, just fucking pumps out babies. Bethany, stillborn children, which but also like justing aside, I feel like if you look at Barbary Dustin, what she's like as a person, and like considering that like she would have to deal with fucking living with Roose, she probably had to be like a pretty savvy, tough person. Well, she's either savvy and tough or like a complete pushover. And I think it's more interesting to think of her as savvy and tough to like foil Catelyn.
I think so. I think that he likes savvy and tough too.
Yeah, like I feel like he would like that. That's why Rooslyn is so good. Oh my God, the fucking show. The like fucking amped up the sexual tension between Roose and Catelyn in the Red Wedding so much.
Mm-hmm.
He literally looks at her during the bedding and was like, I bet you did a great job getting fucked. And fucking Catelyn's like, nah, Eddard didn't let anybody watch because my husband would have punched you. It's incredible. Yeah. That really happened. And like,
yeah, I know.
Like, that happened. Oh my God. I'm still not over it. I'm still.
And it's been stabs like, her oldest son. Right,
and then stabs her oldest son right in front of her. And then also, like, all the bad, the accidental, like, Roose walks in on Rob and Talisa and, like, glowers at Rob. Like, I'm, like, right. Bisexual icon. But that stuff is, like, it's so fucking funny that way. Like, that Rob, God, Rob first gets an erection watching a woman saw a man's leg off. And him and Roose finally have something in common to talk
finally.
About.
Finally.
Yeah.
How do you think the viewers of the show felt about Roose Bolton back then, not knowing what was coming from the books?
He? Who is he? Yeah, because if you hadn't read the book, he doesn't get called by name. Like, there's so many, he's like so many like side characters on that show, and that if you don't look stuff up, it's like, who the fuck is this? Because he doesn't get addressed by name at all. He's just kind of.
But he has all this advice.
Yeah, he has all this advice. Into the background. Like, I had read actually some people's posting back when the Red Wedding episode aired, because I was watching the show and I knew. And people were like, oh, yeah, this guy like seems solid and he hasn't a lot of advice. What's going on with him?
This guy.
Was like generally the people who didn't know how they responded to him.
Seems like a bro.
He seems like a solid dude. Dude, what's up with him? Like, people were like curious.
Kind of looks like Ned.
Yeah, kind of looks like Stannis, actually.
Yeah, in the show he does.
In the show he looks like Stannis. Old man's. And all that blue light, God.
So much blue light.
I thought his scene with Walder right after the Red Wedding, I like kind of love it and I kind of hate it. That's the Ramsay has his own ways forever young scene.
Oh, yeah.
Which, like, it just didn't, like, I don't know. Like, they're both really good actors, but there's like just like the dialogue's a little like the forever young thing. They sold it, and like Roose is that petty. We've discussed that, but it's just such like a weird scene.
Yeah, it was weird, but like it had some emotion. So
yeah, well, he does have some emotion because he's like he's an amused dude.
I guess it's not a bad time to ask what you thought about the adaptation overall in the series with the. The way that Roose Bolton, Ramsay Bolton, I mean, without going into every single detail, because...
Yeah, there's so much. So we stopped watching it...
Midway through season five.
Overall?
Yeah, overall.
I mean, we've seen, like, isolated
episodes.
I feel
like we've talked about this, but maybe not.
Yeah, and, like, if you... So, I feel like if all three of your cast members are like, man, I was really uncomfortable about something that we had to do.
Right.
Like, literally all three of them just expressed discomfort about it. And, like, it was uncomfortable to watch. It wasn't,
land.
Yeah, it didn't land. I think there are ways to, like, film and talk about certain things. This is important. Outlander. Outlander's a great show. Outlander has themes of sexual assault but also shows how people then deal with it and the psychological effects in a really like great respectful way and like really good storytelling around it. And
they just kind of pivoted away from it completely.
Yeah, they just pivoted away from it completely, and I felt like it was there to like upset me. And like honestly, if I wanted to be upset, I would just watch the news. Like, if I want like a story about fucking like medieval people,
or just read this chapter.
I would just read this chapter. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of complications to me to like meeting a child and like planning to film that once she's an adult.
The whole thing is just
like cringy and weird, and like I knew it was gonna be cringy and weird. And
didn't help that we like watched it in a
large group.
People.
It was so uncomfortable. It was like everyone was so uncomfortable. And we knew it was coming because I had read all that because we cracked the interviews with the cast. We were like, oh, it's going to be. And if they're saying it's bad and it felt bad, it's going to be bad. Because like, I'm like, if you film something like people, I don't know, I'm in the like against method acting camp because I'm like, no, you should be able to like act and do your job. Like, not always, because I'm also not an actor, but like, I don't know. Ewan has always talked about how, like, acting should be playing pretend. And that, Zach, you spoke with him about it. Duh. Like how he, like, he's like, no, this is, like, playing pretend, and I don't bring it home with me. It's just, like, a job. I go and I play, like, cowboys and Indians or, like, Westeros. Like, God, what a fucking racist, problematic children's game. Sorry, everyone. I'm sorry that I'm like this. Always. just fucking, But the point being, like, he said that he's like, no, this is just, like, something I go and I do, and it's my job, and then I put it down. Like, I feel like for people to be bought, like, I don't know.
I think it's something that I struggled with as well, and I think we all asked ourselves the same question at that point in season five. And I think we should talk about how it plays out in this chapter, and I think we should talk about kind of what that means in the context of Theon's journey, what that means in the context of Ramsay, and what most importantly, in my opinion, means in the context of Jane Poole here. This is a really difficult topic, and I've been thinking a lot about it because it's difficult to talk about it, and I think that it's a delicate situation. I think George R. R. Martin does a pretty good job of handling it fairly delicately and getting the point across without it being, you know, over sensationalized or anything like that. But curious kind of from your guys' opinion as we're reading what is maybe one of the most like chilling passages in A Song of Ice and Fire, kind of how you feel or kind of what your thoughts or interpretations are from the book's perspective.
Yeah. And like, I don't think George is always like perfect at it, but I think it's definitely better than the show. Well, because it's internal.
100% better than how they handle it on the show.
But also the thing is that when you're looking at the process it is somewhat just a problem of like visual media in general, that because you don't get the internal monologue, it's always kind of objectifying and flattening, even
well, and the way they changed, using Sansa instead of Jane Poole. I mean, that's a whole nother
conversation. Fucking thing.
I feel like that's a whole
We were both pretty, pretty against it. I'm pretty into Sansa stuff, and you're like ambivalent / enjoy the later stuff. But my point is that we have like a range of feelings about Sansa between both of us, and we both thought it was like not great.
The thing is, the feel of it was, they took a character that is pretty divisive in the fandom on her own and put her in this very traumatic situation. And it just felt like it was more to get a reaction out of the viewers than anything else.
Yeah.
And it didn't really need to happen.
It also cut put Jane in.
No, and it cut out a really interesting storyline because now like nothing essentially happens in the Vale.
Yeah. And I think also not only is it an interesting storyline, but I think that replacing Jane with Sansa kind of changes the point of what happens here. I think it changes the point of what happens with Theon, because from the way I see it, somebody like Jane Poole is already going to be at a disadvantage because she's not highborn and she's a means to an end. And she's just kind of here. And throughout this entire chapter, we get Theon saying over and over again, like, how come nobody notices her eyes, or why isn't anybody paying attention? It's because people don't really care. But I think that like seeing Theon with her throughout this chapter is Theon A, turning into himself again, and B, kind of showing some sort of sympathy towards her and showing some sort of like he feels for her and her situation. And so I think that it just kind of plays into this narrative of lowborn women in A Song of Ice and Fire. And I don't know. I don't know how to eloquently talk about my thoughts, but
I know what you mean, because how Theon would have treated someone like her beforehand is very different. We see this from like his like ship sex that he has.
Yeah.
Oh, God, and also God, even at the beginning of the chapter when Jane like talks about that she would be his whore or his wife, just like broke my heart, because she's really, like, that's all she's taught, so that sad. She can have the options as.
Interesting thing, like, I mean, obviously in the show, because of the, you know, external POV that we kind of already covered, I think something interesting about like George R. R. Martin's choice of having it be Jane is and someone who is not a POV character and who has kind of been absent from the story until this point. I think, like Theon says, her breasts were small and pointed, her hips narrow and girlish, her legs as skinny as a bird, a child. Theon had forgotten how young she was. Sansa's age. Arya would be even younger. I think, you know, I think something that happens with the POV characters, especially the children, is people kind of start treating them like adults, because we are so in their head, and, you know, we are exposed to so much of their lives and just like, I don't know. Like, I feel like that's why a lot of people have very strong feelings about, like, Sansa and Arya, and why people get really heated, because some people are like, you know, well, like, why aren't these children acting like adults? Or, like, you know, she's more mature than the other one. And, you know, it goes back and forth infinitely forever. And I think having Jane here kind of makes things almost, in a sense, like you're looking at her in a more objective way, and in a way that actually highlights how kind of just like chilling this whole scene is, and how dark it is. Because you don't have that sort of, you don't have these like preconceived notions and opinions about like choices that she's made and what's going on in her head, and you know, kind of things like that. It's just more like, wow, here is a literal child who has just been a pawn in, you know, all these like Littlefinger and Roose and, you know, all these other
people. Look how much it does not matter. Look what happens to her. It's just how much it just doesn't matter.
Yeah. So I think the choice of Jane actually really, because I mean, George could have chosen it to be Sansa. He could have put the real Arya in there. Like, you don't know what was going through his mind. But I think the choice of Jane actually like drives a lot home.
Yeah, and I've thought about it. I think it would just be too much to read from her point of view. I don't think I think because George talks about how horrible it is pretty honestly. And like some of the, honestly, during the Brienne chapters where there was just like a lot of like rape threat, that was one of the few times that I've paused while reading a book because it was too much. Because I'm really very invested in Brienne as a character, and like even, and that was just like a threat. That was like a, it might not happen. And for a while, I actually couldn't reread when Roose first appears in those things, because like the stuff with Brienne being like in like rape threat danger was like too much for me. I love her so much.
Got a lot of that in Feast for Crows.
Feast for Crows was real rough. That it was, because it was really prolonged. It's not like it was like one scene. Right. And like that was actually something that
you're a woman, I'm a man, there's not a lot of people around, so this might happen.
And that I'm even maybe a little bit critical of, because like
we get it.
You could have mentioned it once. And I think maybe some of this is that maybe George R. R. Martin hasn't had to live with what having that threat hang over you is like. Because like it's not like when you feel that way, you feel it once and then it goes away. It really does hang over you. I don't know if other people like here agree with that. But I really find that like when you're in a situation where that threat feels real, it's not like it's very overwhelming.
I think that also to tie this in even more is that by having this happen to somebody who, like, I look at like Brienne also isn't a highborn. Well, Brienne is her own person, but she doesn't have that same like quote unquote status that Sansa has. And I'm Sansa's number one biggest fan, so I will defend her to the ends of the earth. But Sansa is gonna be okay regardless of all the horrible things that she does have to endure, because she has a name tied to herself in a way that somebody like Brienne is such a outcast that Brienne isn't gonna have that card that's gonna eventually, hopefully, get her somewhere safe, in a way that someone like Jane Poole isn't going to have that card that's going to eventually hope to get her somewhere safe. And, you know, Sansa's in a very goes through some very perilous situations as well. And I'm not trying to downplay anything that she goes through. But I think that it just all ties into this conversation that we're having, kind of, and a conversation George R. R. Martin has throughout the series about how people in Westerosi society are treated who aren't our main characters, or who aren't these people born into privilege, regardless of kind of what that privilege has done to them.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the sexual violence Sansa faces, like not all of it, comes from within marriages, whereas for Brienne, it's coming external to marriages. Yeah. Is like a useful, though, because it's not that Sansa doesn't go through it. It's that Peter is like different But like, but then someone who was it that pointed out really something really interesting that I hadn't quite realized is that Lisa Aaron may have raped Peter. And I think some of it is because they're existing in a society where Peter Baelish maybe wouldn't one necessarily have that like language or conception of it, or that that's something that like a woman can do to a man. Especially not like, for example, Dorne could maybe have that conception because they are, Dorne has more frank and open like conversations about sexuality that are more like comparable to what like our like more progressive end of.
Yeah,
so you're giving me a look. Am I embarrassing you?
I'm just laughing because I'm like, we finally got to Dorne.
We're just gonna talk about this one today.
Yeah, I think that's cool. For the best.
Okay, yeah, but
because we just have a lot to talk about.
Because we've got a lot to go through. Dorne. So Sansa, the threat Sansa faces, like regarding sexual violence, a lot of times come from like. Within marriage or within like Peter's thing is like that's a whole weird fucking thing, and then Sandor is like a whole weird fucking thing, but like the stuff with Tyrion and the stuff with
Joffrey.
I couldn't think of Jojo's name. I like to get freaky, you know what I mean? That's a reference to bad looking Game of Thrones. Like that comes from within a marriage, but for low-born women, and like we see this with Ramsay's mother, even like it doesn't. That's like related to the concept of marriage, but like that's like extramarital.
Yeah. So just like in the context of kind of what the point he's trying to make, you know, like I said, not trying to.
That like definitely like it's for not sure. A minimization of either one of them. Just the types of violence that they face the threat of are different. Like intersections, like
different amalgamations.
Kimberly Crenshaw, yeah,
and there's different lessons to be learned.
Yeah, about like what violence looks like.
Something I feel like this kind of flows in and out of the same conversation. It's kind of everything that Ramsay's done to Theon/Reek and kind of his everything he's gone through, and how this chapter I feel like is really the first time he starts to recognize himself again. He calls himself Theon for the first time, I think, in A Dance with Dragons. And he does a lot of name stuff in context of Jane, and we kind of start to see him reassert himself after everything that he's been through so far with Ramsay, even though he knows.
Yeah, and then goes through more. Like,
and I mean, he really gets really far. I mean, at the end of the chapter, he does, like, when he's back in Ramsay's presence, he really kind of shrinks back into that, like, Reek mode. But he's still...
They're alone. There's so few people there. This doesn't feel like it's a big like wedding where there's other people that could possibly hold Ramsay's actions to account or Roose's actions to account.
But he still does have the moment where he thinks about like the dagger, and he does kind of entertain that for like a little, like, you know, just like a minute,
which is huge.
Which is
that's huge.
Yeah, so it's like really, you know, it's really interesting that even though he does kind of go back into that shell a little bit, just this like kind of brief time, and I think really the exposure to Jane, and seeing what she's going through, really kind of gives him a new perspective, and he does start getting there even in Ramsay's presence.
God, yeah, but then that last thing, because he's being called Theon again. And then it ends with him as Reek once he... God.
Do you think that's a full decline? Or do you think it's just situational?
I think it's like, situational. Yeah. And this is like... Like, some of it is, like, literary, of course. Like, you know, like he's making a literary decision about how to characterize people. But also, like, when you do have, like... trauma that causes like dissociative stuff, like it is, like I'm saying this experientially, it is it does shift and it is situational, like how you function. But like, and of course, like this is also like, I don't know, analyzing fiction in terms of psychology is real weird because at the end of the day there's not like the characters aren't there thinking and like having thoughts and having diagnosable mental illnesses that match the same way we talk about mental illnesses, and diagnoses definitely fit everyone 100% of the time, of course.
Yeah.
You know, like it's complicated, but
yeah,
I think it is a realistic portrayal of the way that like functioning dissociatively to deal with trauma works. At least for me, it feels really realistic.
And I think it's an interesting take on what George is kind of continually doing with the idea of, like, you know, like heroes and damsels in distress, because, you know, instead of getting say like a highborn character and a prince, you get kind of the lowborn character in Jane, and then sort of kind of this, you know, Theon like makes a point of saying, like, instead of being remembered as a prince and like the Prince of Winterfell, he's only going to be remembered as a turncloak. So I think it's kind of an interesting reversal of the kind of classic fairy tale tropes, which is pretty standard George.
It's just a bastard in this dark room. It's a lowborn girl, and it's decimated reek.
Yeah.
You know, the cast of characters is,
yeah.
Yeah. It's a dark place.
And it's a very human, like, Ramsay is a fucked up dude, but he's a human person. He's not a dragon. He's not a beast in human skin. But he's not a mythical.
Oh my god, if any listeners think that Roose Bolton is a vampire, just unplug right fucking now. Because I'm trying to.
Good, because, you know, I was actually about to ask you.
No.
Should I log off then?
No, oh my god.
Just kidding.
Oh, I was about to like go in. No, but for real, send me your IP address and your credit card information if you believe. Because I was talking about this, there's a quote with the torchlight across everyone's face and they all become bestial except for Roose, which is a mask. Roose is not a vampire, because if they're fucking monsters, then it's not scary. End of story.
He just has no inner dialogue, you know? He's chill.
Yeah, and he just has two chips of dirty ice where his eyes should be.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's it. Like, that's, and I get that it's like, oh, the other people are like turning into animals, but he's like a dude. And like the bolt on thing.
He's ice cold.
He's just a cold, fucked up dude, and so is Ramsay. Because then they're not scary if they're like fucking White Walker vampire bullshit. Like, then they're just fucking monsters. But it's scary because they're people. Like, really. Yeah. Some fucking books.
That's a good point.
Like, sorry, I get so heated up about that, and people ask me about it a lot, and I respond this intensely every fucking
good.
Time.
Good.
Every, like, if you want to get me riled up in a public place and make me embarrass myself,
we like it.
About this.
Is Roose a vampire? What were we going to say, Hannah?
Well, I was going to kind of shift gears a little bit, because if that's okay.
Oh,
but
yeah.
In the context.
Somber, like, sorry. Ugh.
It's a somber chapter. I think there's no way around it. Well, but in the context.
Yeah. Sorry.
In the context of everything that's going on with Theon and Ramsay and Jane, I want to ask you guys what you think about the Grand Northern Conspiracy, because we get some Frey Pie in here, and we get these interesting conversations that we're having with Lady Dustin. And I'm just curious on your guys' thoughts. I feel like there's some inklings of this Northern conspiracy theory happening in this chapter, and I'm curious on anybody's thoughts on whether or not that's something that's happening.
Well,
kind of what the Boltons are doing.
Confused, like I get what the phrase means, and I've read the theory, but like we're reading like a political, and I guess what it is that for me, because we're reading a political intrigue book. I like of course there are going to be some people moving against them, and like some people moving for. Like, I think Barbary is definitely for Roose unless it gets her killed, as well as the other. Like, doesn't who has Roose Jr. that's related to Barbary?
Wait, who's Roose
Jr.? Little Roose.
Oh, I don't know.
It's one of the Riswells, though, right? Yeah, there's a Riswell named after Roose. And also Barbary Dustin really fucking hates Eddard Stark.
Yeah.
Fucking does not like him one bit. And I'm sure, so like, this is going to sound like a dumb answer, but There are probably some people that are for the Boltons. There are probably some people that are against them. There's probably other minor lords who have, like, not done great under the Starks and are like, man, my life could suck less right now as long as I don't get my skin cut off.
Always concerned.
But, like, just the mere concept of, like, the Great Northern Conspiracy, whenever I hear it, like, you all aren't like this, but there's some people I just, like, roll my eyes at when they say it, because they're the same people that are like, I want Jon Snow to be king, or I want Sansa to be queen in the North, which I'm like, she just wants to be left alone and to heal from her trauma. She doesn't want to have to rule, and yes, she would be good at it, but just, like, let the girl fucking, like, take a deep breath and, like, fucking heal. Like, you fucking... Oh, my God. Sorry. Like, that one, probably, like, she's gonna be queen, and she's, like, such a... Like, yes, she's a great, like, political... like work, but that she doesn't necessarily enjoy it. She, like, did that to, like,
for survival,
and, like, using skills that you learn to survive isn't fun and cool, because she's not a shitty person like Peter.
I know, but there's two books left. She might have to survive some more.
Yeah, no, she will have to survive, but she doesn't, like, get off on ruining people's lives like Peter Baelish does. That's what Peter Baelish wants to make her into, and she's not fucking like that.
Ooh, passions.
Sorry, I got so riled up. So they should play the rat cook. I'm not riled up. Also, just, like, feeding human beings other human beings if they don't know it. That's, like, one of my top squicks. I'm like, nah, that's gross. This is gross.
That's too far, right?
Yeah, it's, like, too far. I'm sexualizing Robwind. Fine. Non-consensually feeding people to other people.
Chunks of roasted pork.
Lord Manderly.
That's the hot take.
Hannah, do you think it's human flesh that they're eating in that pie?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I mean, he's yelling for the rat cook song. That sort of seals the deal. Like, really? Yeah.
George is not subtle about stuff like that. Like the R plus L equals J thing. Like, we also just have so much time is some of it. Like, maybe if this was like if we didn't have, like, years between books to think about it, like,
maybe it would seem less
obvious. But here we are, George.
You did
well,
this,
and also
George.
Manderly is living way too much. Like, he's too hype.
Yeah, he's like too hype. And, like, yo, free Fat Walda 2K forever, girl does 2K forever. Girl grows up being made fun of by her fucking, like, literally hundreds of relatives. Then she finally manages to get out of that shitty social situation and get to be, like, basically Queen of the North with her, like, creepy older man husband. But, like...
Yeah, get it.
Yeah, well, she's, like, 50. Ooh, but, oh, my God. So then, like, gets to marry an evil senior citizen with a homicidal son who's probably going to kill her. And fucking Stan... And if he doesn't kill her, Stannis will execute her. And meanwhile, some fucko is, like, then also feeding her relatives while she doesn't even know about
it. I felt bad that she was eating it. I was like, oh, don't eat that.
Yeah, Walda. Free Walda.
She had 3 slices.
Oh,
she
no.
Did. No, seriously, says that. And I was like, Walda, no. Walda. And Roose is like, I'm not going to eat this. It's like the best part. Roose is just sitting there like, Roose does not have anything. Roose is like, not going to drink, not going to eat, don't feel like getting poisoned.
Only eats whatever Manderly
tries, yeah.
Yeah. Motherfucker doesn't have time for any of this nonsense. Yeah, so
what
I think-
did you think about... Sorry, go on.
I was gonna say, I think Roose thinks that there might be a northern conspiracy. He's valid.
Well, he's certainly working on one of his own.
Yeah.
Fear is what keeps a man alive in this world of treachery and deceit or whatever.
What do you think about Wyman Manderly's singers and performers? It's like, oh, they're all like part-time performers. Maybe they're also part-time good at fighting with stuff.
Yeah, that I've heard about, and I think it could be true. Like that.
Suspicious.
Yeah, that is suspicious. And I like. Well, then also because Mance Rayder is also there.
Yeah, he there's mm-hmm. like rolls up.
Then there's the whole question of what's going on with the pink letter. Is that so? My favorite pink letter crack theory. This is my pink letter crack theory. Is that the pink letter is not written by Ramsay Bolton. It is written by Roose Bolton pretending to be Ramsay.
That's so funny.
And when you read that letter as Roose pretending to be Ramsay, it is wild.
I mean, just think about it. Think about him doing that with, like, I don't know, like, he maybe Walda is helping him for all we know.
Because,
like,
Roose is...
Just think about, like...
Roose is also smart enough to make it seem like it's Ramsay's handwriting, is, like, my big thing.
Come and see.
Yeah, come... Oh, my God. Fucking come and see. What a fucking challenge. That letter is fucking, like, harrowing.
What's the advantage of having Roose having written that over Ramsay?
I mean, so the advantage, so because I think he's trying to, like, lure Jon Snow there for some sort of strategical position. I this is just a crack theory. Like, I think he's trying to lure Jon somewhere, and potentially something has happened to Ramsay, and Roose doesn't want Jon to know. Roose, it's advantageous for Jon to think that he's still alive.
Oh no.
I guess gonna have to pop that baby out of Walda and have a boy lord. Boilers are the bane of any house.
That would be an interesting update if we find out that that's how it's gone, that Roose is kind of the one on top and it's not Ramsay.
Yeah, like, I know everyone thinks it's going to be Ramsay, like, thanks D&D, but I don't, I just want Stannis to decapitate Roose in a fucking, I want Stannis and Roose to meet and have a cool conversation, because Roose is, like, the only thing that's bad is kinslaying, and Stannis killed his fucking brother, and Stannis is all about, like, obeying the people that you're loyal to, and Roose doesn't fucking do that at all.
Praise people.
Cass has had to hear this a million times. Am I boring you?
No, I'm just okay, like, I'm exploring.
Yeah, so it would be cool. It'd be a cool conversation. They even look like each other on the show. It'd be cool as fuck. And Stannis stole his leeches on the show, and Roose needs them back.
Roose just, like, turns up, Stannis, I'm here not to fight a war, but to demand the return of the hostages you stole. Stannis, like, what?
Oh, sorry.
What hostages?
My leeches.
My leeches.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. How much bad blood I've built up. I've been trapped in Winterfell in the winter with my son, and he's a whole piece of work. Gosh.
Those are all things he detests. The only thing he likes out of all of that are his leeches.
Yeah, no, Barbary says he loves them. Loves the old leech. But hooray for the practicing the four humors. I do really like that. That's a funny trait about him, is that you have to remember that also what that tells us in the context of Westeros is that he's a hypochondriac. Maybe not hypochondriac, but he's very, like, health concerned, like the prunes and the digestion, because, like, leeches are... Because, oh my God, when he's fucking having the meeting in Clash of Kings and he's just fucking he's naked, covered in leeches, that's like a medical process to him. So, like, there isn't a nudity taboo in Westeros, slash there shouldn't really be if it's era appropriate. Like, there wasn't as much of a nudity taboo. It would be that he's just, like, weirdly obsessed with healthcare. Like, he's just, like...
He's a thoughtful dude.
Yeah, he's a thoughtful dude. Loves his healthcare. Yeah. But that's like a weird personality trait. And in terms of, like, does Roose have anxieties about things? This is, like, again, okay, now this is entirely me making shit up. Which is that I've always felt like that in a modern setting, Roose would be a more neurotic person. Because in the classic setting, when he's, like, neurotic and wants to control things, he can just fucking kill people and cut their skin off and do whatever the fuck he wants because he's... like a lord of somewhere, whereas in a mod, especially if it's, like, weird modern suburban setting, which is what I tend to read a lot, and where he has to blend it, like, yes, especially once Eddard's dead in classic, Roose doesn't have to do things to blend into society and what the rules of society are. He controls what the rules of society are to a certain extent, as long as the people in his land are satisfied, because, like, he's warden of the north. That has always been my rule. I suggest you make it yours. I'm sorry that I'm just, like, roosing casually.
The roose is loose.
The roose has been loose this whole episode.
The roose is so very loose. Yeah, but the point is that I think if in a modern setting or in a setting where he wouldn't have control, I think he becomes, like, a more neurotic person, and, like, that some of his, like, coldness and calculatingness was also to deal with, like, these, again, just entirely headcanons that he has, like, ways that he needs the world to be, and he needs to enforce that.
And that's his purpose.
That's what his purpose is. Is definitely also, again, now these are just, like, headcanons. These are just things I made up that are not necessarily true. which is that when he was younger, he was probably, I think, a bit more of a rowdy boy. Not as explicit and wild as Ramsay, but, like, and a lot of times when you hear, like, in Cass all up on that true crime life knows about this, that people, like, when, like, serial killers and people who exhibit that type of behavior when they're, like, teenagers tend to, like, explore and test what the boundaries are a little bit, that I think when he was much
younger. And they also, like, you also, like, figure out what your, like, what your thing is. Like, you know, like, you'll get a weird boner about something and then you'll be like, I want to, like, tie someone up and, like, tickle their feet and then stab them. Like,
yeah, that
play their skin.
Yeah, and that I think as a young man, especially being a young man with probably a very stern parent, because, like, look at how he is as a father. being told that the central part of your identity is, like, things like a naked man has few secrets, a flayed man has none. The phrase "our blades are sharp" has a lot going on, which is actually, in terms of a phrase, it's actually pretty similar to "winter is coming" in terms of what it tells us about northern values, which is just, like, preparedness. Yeah, but a little more homicidal and dangerous.
Maybe not the one of the two you want leading everything.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely not the guy that you want to be mad at you. But I think he was definitely rowdier as a kid. Like a teenager, like, figuring out boundaries, figuring out what he could get away with. And then realize that, like, what he had to do
That's the vibe "Our Blades Are Sharp" has to me versus "Winter is Coming." Like, "Winter is Coming" is more like, okay, team, huddle up. Like, we got to get through this together. And then, like, "Our Blades Are Sharp" is like, everybody swords out, get ready to stab people. Like, it's more, like, outward, whereas, like, "Winter is Coming" feels more, like, inward, if that makes sense.
No, that's actually really good that "Winter is Coming" is about, like, a call inward and about, like, solidifying the pack.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, like, "Our Blades Are Sharp" is about, like,
is more, like,
external.
Something out there, we have to take it on, like.
Yeah.
And it's all being resolved in the North in the context of all these characters. So fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff about, like, different aspects of Northern culture and really like
priests or weddings.
Yeah, they don't have priests. They don't have priests.
Super quick wedding.
I like that.
No
priests. Very simple. They kneeled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also,
one even, like, officiated that.
Yeah,
like,
no one officiated.
You Theon just was like,
besides the three-eyed crow.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Shit. You're right.
Can I read something?
Oh yeah, sure. Go for it.
Please.
Somewhere in the Godswood, a raven screamed. The dagger was still in his hand. The raven responded to the moment that was happening inside. And of course, after all of the setup from the beginning of the chapter with the gray mist, which I'm staring at now, God, so paranoid, so cloaking the scene, and the obvious presence of the weirwood trees and the obvious presence of, what is it, Bran? Is it?
Yeah, you got poor fucking Bran seeing that. Well, like, Bran is going through so much fucking trauma right now. Like,
why is Bran here? Like, what is Bran interested in this moment, though?
This has got to be so important, right?
Well, this whole, it's his home.
And Mance Rayder's here.
Yeah, shit. Yeah, Mance Rayder is there.
So many things happening right now. Yeah, this is, do you think he might think it's actually the real Arya and he's checking? He's like, wait a second.
Well, I think he would, like, see and be like, oh, shit. Well, because he might have heard about Arya. Well, because there's all the, like, where's Arya fake outs. Because
there's Arya, quote unquote, Arya headed to Jon at the wall.
Yeah, there's a lot of Aryas afoot. Which I think, isn't that, that's Alyssa Karstark, isn't it? The one headed to Jon?
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's Alyssa Karstark.
But yeah, it's like, why can't I hold all these Aryas?
It's like Flay of Karstark, and, like, there's a Stark underneath. I think Ramsay says that at some point in
Flay a Karstark, you find a Stark or something like that. I think he says it in the
books. God, and
it feels more like a book thing.
Yeah, because the Karstark plot is kind of weirdly handled in the show.
It's just
not very clear who they are, and then why, and what they're doing, or why the dispute is significant.
But I mean, also, by the time you get to see the end of season 5, you're like, who is this Littlefinger guy and what happened to the other one?
Yeah,
they're not Starks, they're Karstarks.
Yeah,
okay. Rude. It's just a little bit different.
Yeah, but yeah, so, well, Bran, because it's his home, I think Bran might also, I suspect Bran would know the truth that Theon isn't a traitor. Bran knows that there's some shit going on with Theon that's more complicated than it appears.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And has access to everything that happened in terms of stuff that's like Weirwood near in the north. So probably has a little bit more, like he wouldn't be able to see Theon on the Iron Islands, for example, or some of the other stuff, but he would have the sense, or also when Theon like saved him back with
Asha
in the woods, like him and Theon kind of have a complicated relationship.
Osha.
Yeah.
When is Asha in the woods with Bran?
It's spelt with an O and I still say the sound, you know?
Yeah. I think they have a bit of a complicated relationship. And especially that I think now that he's that a lot has happened to him, I think Bran would understand more. Like, I don't think he would have understood why it was complicated at the start, but I think now
he's come to
understand a lot more about it, especially now that he can, like, go back through the trees and understand. God, when we first fucking see them, all of them together, and Theon's, and they're going to behead the dude, and Bran's nervous about it, and Theon is
carrying the head.
Kicks the head, but also Theon picks up the sword for him, which like that always fucking gets me. That Theon has to watch Uttered behead people always like gets me riled up whenever.
And he has to hold the sword.
And he's not dumb. Like he knows that could be him. And then when he kicks the head and like there's some ways in which like Theon is like a fucko at the beginning, but like. I don't know. Some of the people who are like, Eddard's a good dad. Like, he would still decapitate him, you dumb.
Yeah. But also, I mean, Theon is like at the beginning is clearly like a person who like some people use humor to cope. Like, you know, I think he's like a big memer because he's like dealing with some shit. Because then he's like also a little kid who would go into the Godswood and cry.
Greyjoy memes for sad teens.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah, this is a tough chapter for Theon. I'll be interested to know what Bran thinks about how this all went down whenever we talk to him next, because we spent so much time here, we'll probably get some kind of a readout on it later.
I just hope it comes up between them, or like any of it comes up, because Theon, I mean Bran would be able to see a lot of what happened to Theon, because I'm sure I've always interpreted that the Dreadfort has a Godswood. I've always assumed it did. So I'm sure Theon did some crying there. Let me look at my notes because there's some other shit that I thought of.
I don't know where my notes are at.
No, they're on my phone. Cool. They're very formal wording.
I read it and I felt incredible. Like I was there.
532, yes, so sad seeing Jane, and about how she said there should be things with Roose making a promise to Theon, the beautiful imagery, the description of the Godswoods is really beautiful. Just Barbary fucking being bitter and going in on everything. God, one of the Roose Bolton really did that moments that I mentioned was Theon talking about how Roose would say he would be merciful, and then Roose's mercy being hanging them and not playing them. The part's so fucked up.
That was wild.
Yeah, like that just is like such like
super messed up.
Yeah, but it's such like also just like a good storytelling moment of a way to fit in a small detail that tells us about what Theon has become like accustomed to, and like what has been going on and what his life is like and how Winterfell is reassembled, because that is important.
In such a weakened state compared to what it used to be.
Yeah.
The greenhouses are broken.
All the glass.
All the timber's different. They're completely building the rafters in a way that it didn't used to be.
Yeah.
There's new maesters fluttering about. Fake Arya.
Next is in the next chapter we get the fucking we get the closed island murders.
Yes.
Those are real fun.
It's so interesting having them back to back too. And that's actually the original order. This was in the original order. Usually on the podcast we have it reordered for our Feast with Dragons reading order.
Oh yeah. But
this is back to back how George had them written in A Dance of Dragons, and I really like the transition between the two. But we decided we were only going to do the one today. So whenever we go to Owens, we're just going to do Owens for the
half of them.
For the Prince of Winterfell. But it's the first time we've done it so far, but this is a perfect occasion for it. Because you guys love the Boltons so much. Because you guys are the Boltons.
We are literally literally the Boltons.
You're literally the Boltons.
We say I'm under a neon sign that says dead nudes, like literally home. Send a photo of that.
We also have the full banner too.
Yeah, we have the full banner that we need
HBO
to hang up.
Full Bolton banner that we got.
I'm glad that they made them.
Yeah, I'm glad. And I want to get one of the Frey Towers too. I have a little like wooden Frey Tower setup shelf between next to my bed here. We live in a studio apartment, so like everything's like one.
It's called the Dread Fort.
I mean, it basically is. Yeah. This is the Dread Fort of love. God.
Leave your leeches at home.
When we have you on the podcast next, will you have plenty more to say about Roose Bolton, Theon Greyjoy, Ramsay Bolton, and the antics of whatever they're trying to solve at Winterfell?
Yeah. Well, because so I'm going to be honest, really this sounds silly, but I intentionally haven't really like tried to solve that murder because like this might sound dumb, but like I want to be surprised when I read the next book, if that makes sense. Like,
for sure.
Like I haven't read any theories on it. I don't even think about it. I'm just like, who the fuck is the ghost? Like, that's I just want to read it and be like, oh shit.
That's what we'll do. I promise. We don't have to look at any theories.
Yeah. Like I don't, or at least you can like theories. Just don't tell me about them. I want to be like,
100%.
Like, I just want to be like, when it happens, there's like shit that I just like don't think about, so that I can like, so that I can feel like I'm just totally coming like into it like fresh and fancy. That's
Sherlock author Georg. I don't know what I'm saying.
Georg Holmes.
Georg Holmes. God. And the mystery of Winterfell.
I think we've covered pretty much everything in this chapter.
Yeah,
I think
I'm glad. Yeah, and I think we really have covered a lot.
We really got there.
I think so. Well, I'm glad we decided, as much as we would have loved to talk about Dorne, I'm glad we focused on everything happening in Prince of Winterfell, because I just feel like there's so much going on in this chapter. So that being said, your owns. At the end of the podcast, we do our favorite moment. So what would you, who wants to go first? Our favorite.
Oh,
their own of the chapter.
My favorite own of the chapter. I'm kind of, you know, I think I know it's hard because there's like a lot of like hot fucking content here, especially for me. But I think really, because I was looking at a gift set for the quote earlier today. It is when Barbary is talking to It's the Roose has no feelings, you see. Those leeches that he loves so well sucked all the passions out. Like, well, it's really the whole quote, God, that I love him so well sucked all the passions out of him years ago. He does not love, he does not hate, he does not grieve. This is a game to him mildly diverting. Some men hunt, some men hawk, some tumble dice. Roose plays with men. You and me, these Freys, Lord Manderley, his plump new wife, even his bastard, we are but his playthings. Like, I really love that quote. And there is, I like looked at a gift set that that someone on Tumblr had made that was like different images of Roose throughout the show in it. And I just really like, I just come back to that a lot. Like that really, like the things that I get really like fixated on about like the characters and like things that I'm doing, like to maybe like deal with some stuff myself, like that quote just fucking like gets me every fucking time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, hun?
Okay. So I think mine, I could be myself and be like the part where Roose says, Ramsay, go and fuck while the men talk about business. So one thing overall that I really love about the entire series is I feel like no matter how many times I reread it, which at this point has been a lot, there's always something, I feel like I always discover something new, you know, like if it's just, you know, a very, very small detail that I didn't pick up on during one reading or just, you know, a new line that kind of hits you in a new way. So I think for me, it was the part we were talking about earlier, where Theon is thinking about the Godswood. Theon Greyjoy was no stranger to this Godswood. He had played here as a boy. And then just the line where it gets to the part in amongst the chestnuts and the elms and the soldier pines, he had found secret places where he could hide when he wanted to be alone. I think that that part really, aww, really is the one that really jumped out at me in a new way this time. And I think that's a really powerful part of what Theon's entire storyline is about. But it also just like drives home just like the quality of what George has given us, which is just, you know, these really, really in-depth books that, you know, every read is like the first read in some way. And that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. That's very good.
Such good owns. Mine's short. Winterfell was full of ghosts for Theon and Greyjoy.
Yeah.
So good.
I don't know what I'm going to do for mine.
Wyman Manderly was partying at someone else's party.
Yeah, that's a good one. Cool. Kind of want to give it to Jane Poole just flat out.
Oh, yeah, Jane.
So that's one of them. So I'm going to give to you. And then the other one, I want to do the line of, I made myself the Prince of Winterfell, he thought. And from that came all of this.
Yeah.
Just like Theon's arrogance led him to some harsh reality. So I thought that was a good moment in his millions of moments of great internal dialogue.
Yeah.
Those are our owns. Here are some of yours for half the one yours. Chapter. Yeah, the half.
Okay, first up, and I will say, we will save your other half of your owns for the next episode. So don't you worry. First up, we have Brienne of Tarth at Beauty Brienne, who says, owned the ghost imagery and memories in Theon's chapter. It's the worst kind of nostalgia.
Jen Calhoun at Calhooner. All y'all and fucking eating people. So Jen's read is owned for Prince to the best pry you have ever tasted and the beautiful way Manderly says what he's done by requesting the song about the rat cook, a cook from the night fort who served a pie to a king made of his own son's flesh. Hashtag Frey pies, bitches.
Yeah.
Jen rocks.
Okay, so Nafisa Angel at Nafisa_W owns go to Theon for finally reclaiming his identity. This aww. Is the first chapter where he thinks of himself as Theon since becoming Reek.
Mm-hmm.
Our last own for the Prince of Winterfell, Jerry from Mayo at Unloused on Twitter, owned for the Prince of Winterfell to Wyman Manderly. The pies, the song requests, the plotting. He's playing the Boltons in the phrase like a fiddle. Hashtag the North remembers. Bonus owned to U2 for having one of their songs make the Westeros Billboard top 40.
It's so funny.
The musicians began to play again, and the bard Abel began to sing Two Hearts That Beat as One. I'm away at present and didn't get a chance to reread The Watch before I left, so can't offer an own there, sadly. No problem.
We got you. We did this just for you.
Yeah, honestly, Two of Hearts. Yeah. I was laughing about the song Two of Hearts.
Two hearts that beat as one.
And we had to get it in there. Yeah, we had to get that in there. But no, but Gary, and also there's the Michael Bolton joke. He's the long lost Bolton.
I love you two so much. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Love you too, Zach. Yeah.
It's so nice.
So fun.
This was fun.
This was a blast. I didn't know I could have this much fun talking about so much death and decay, but I should have known if the Boltons were joining us for this chapter.
That's what we bring to the party.
Fun.
No pies.
Do you guys want to plug your socials again? I know we did it at the front of the episode, but where can people find you?
Postmodern Bolton.
So you do yours.
Yeah,
and
so postmodern modern.
Just go to DomrickBolton.com. It's all there, I'm sure.
I love my dead gay son.com. No, so my Tumblr URL is Love Your Crooked Neighbor, LoveYourCrookedNeighbor.tumblr.com. My Instagram is Necro, NECRO.Pharmacon, PharmaKon. I don't use Twitter because I find it too stressful. You can also find me on archiveofourown.com, a crooked neighbor spelled the same way as in the Tumblr URL, if you want to read my nastiness. It's nasty. I was featured on like a crack.com article for the 10 most shocking Game of Thrones fan fiction sex scenes. Saying that I'm one of the most disgusting people on the internet.
That is quite a trophy to carry.
I am also blocked by a number of important people in this fandom. A variety of reasons. If it's just that people don't like my content, that's totally fine. But it's just funny.
So I am on the Tumblr.com as well at Tender, T-E-N-D-E-R - Vittles, V-I-T-T-L-E-S.
That's a cat food.
It's a defunct brand of cat treats that I used to feed my childhood cat. My AO3 is the same thing, just no hyphen or anything. It's just all one word. Instagram is the same thing, just with a dot instead of the hyphen.
Your Twitter.
And then my Twitter is at secret shy boy, all one word. Everything is spelled like it's spelled. And that's it.
Yeah, come read our ghost fan fiction. It's very sexy.
I'm sorry for all the works in progress.
Oh, and my Dead Rob side blog is perhaps I've made a terrible mistake .tumblr.com, which that's literally just all art of Rob dead or dying. It's so that I have to clutter my main blog and like if I want to like go in the pit and look at all of it at once, I can.
Oh wow!
It's like the virtual museum.
Yeah, that's my virtual museum of Dead Rob. That's all of our socials. Really, thank you both for having us on.
Yeah, this was so much
super fun.
No, it was a blast.
It was awesome. We appreciate your guys' time.
If you see Sydney and Cass at a Song of Ice and Fire meetup, Game of Thrones meetup occasion, I'm not sure, you need to walk up and say hi. There's two of my favorite people, and you will not be disappointed. Great conversations will follow. It'll be a blast.
And please, if you do see us somewhere, please feel free to say hi. Really murder people.
We're not shy.
But for real, we the fandom has brought together our live and also other friendships. Okay, I'm gonna stop so you can end your show.
I don't know
how y'all end your show.
Please listen to the next podcast whenever it comes out, and all the other ones. And thank you for listening to this episode, everyone.
Yeah, right? That's how we do it. And then should I guess we'll send you the file.